Hello everyone, welcome to the Research and Software Engineering Group. Today we're with Mike Barnett. Mike, hello.
Hey, Pelle. Hello everybody out there.
So Mike, who are you?
Well, I'm a developer in the RISE group, and I've been working for several years on the SpecSharp project and on tools like IL-Merge. And what I care about is programs and making them more correct and more robust, making them more dependable. What we're announcing today is an exciting new project that we're releasing called Code Contracts, which will be part of .NET 4.0 and be a basic part of the base class library in .NET 4.0.
So today we're going to see how to get started with Code Contracts. What are Code Contracts?
Absolutely. And I think we should just do a demo and jump into some code and show.
Let's just, you know, cut the conversation and go into Visual Studio
code
right
always
away.
Better. All right. So I'm sitting here in Visual Studio, and you can see that I have quite an empty console application. It just has a main method that does nothing. Let's do some incredibly...
So this is, before you go on, this is Visual Studio 2008.
Sorry, this is Visual Studio 2008, and the tools that are released on DevLabs today work with Visual Studio 2008. They will also work with Visual Studio 2010. But right now I'm showing you a demonstration based on our Visual Studio 2008.
So our viewers can go to DevLabs right now and download contracts and
absolutely.
Do the demo.
And they can, and there's samples in it, and the samples are, this is very close to one of the samples in the distribution, and open up the samples and start playing with it immediately.
Excellent. Okay, let's go on.
So let's do a really simple class. Let's just create a class which represents rational numbers, and it does that by holding on to a numerator and a denominator, which are integers. And of course we need a constructor that lets you pass in a numerator and a denominator, and it's going to set the fields, and that's all a constructor has to do pretty much is set the fields. And we'll put a very simple method on the So let's just have a method that returns the closest integer. It does it by truncation. So the method toInt is going to return an int, and it's going to do it by just doing integer division on the numerator and the denominator. Great. So now we have enough of a...
So far, I'm still following.
Good. It's pretty easy so far. It's a very simple class. Let's use it now. Let's go to the main program, create an instance of the rational number, send some values for numerator and denominator, and then let's print out the result we get from the toInt. Okay, so this seems really simple. This is clearly a more simple program than I'm sure almost everyone out there has written, but you know, it's got a lot of the features of things that go on in real programs. We're creating an object, it has some initial state, we have an operation that performs on that state, and now I'm going to start debugging and just run this program to see what happens. And probably a lot of people have jumped ahead. They saw as I was typing that it was kind of silly to create a rational that has a zero denominator, because then if I call the toInt method on it, I get a divide by zero exception. This happens all the time in our code. We allow things, parameters to be passed in that end up causing a problem way downstream. And the idea with code contracts is to be able to give programmers a way to prevent such errors and to prevent them far upstream from where, like this, that, you know, who knows how long it's been between the time that rational was created and when we finally did this operation on it that caused the exception to happen. Okay, so what do I mean by adding contracts? What happens? Well, I want to not allow a client to do something so silly as pass in a zero denominator. And the way you would do that today in your code is you would write some parameter validation code in the constructor that might throw an exception saying argument null,
if the denominator is zero.
So I'm going to throw an exception. But we're going to give you a better way to do that now. So let me show you how that works. I'm going to add a call to a particular method that exists in our contract library that comes in our...
So this contract type is new.
Contract type is new. And notice that Visual Studio doesn't seem to know anything about it. I'm getting a red squiggly for that. Why is that? Well, because I didn't add a reference to my solution yet. So when you install code contracts from DevLabs, you'll get Visual Studio integration so that you can just add a reference. We're going to just look in the .NET pane of the add reference dialog, and we're just going to scroll down to where it says Microsoft.contracts library. And that's already going to be populated for you, so you can just add the reference to any project you want. Now, of course, we need a using statement, so let's type that. And notice that it's in System Diagnostics Contracts. That's the namespace that will be in a new namespace, which is in MS Core Lib in .NET 4.0.
So in .NET 4.0, contract will be part of the BCL.
That's right. So in .NET 4.0, this namespace and class I'm showing you will be in MS Core Lib, will be in the base class library. Our integration today uses a separate small library on the side, which you will no longer need once we move forward, once we all move forward to .NET 4.0.
Excellent.
Okay. So now I've added the reference to the contract library. I've added the using statement, so I have access to that class. And now you can see that there is a class called contract with a method requires. And it requires that the denominator, I only at first thought it needed to be non-zero, but now I think about it, I think I'll make these all, denominator should be positive. There's no reason to have a negative denominator. So let me add that stronger condition that the constructor should not be called with a denominator which is not a positive number. And now...
So what do I do now that I've written a requires?
So you've written this requires. Now how is a client supposed to know about that? Well, one thing you can do is go to the properties of the project and we can turn on runtime checking. So you can see here that there's a new pane that when you install code contracts, this pane gets added to all of your C# and VB projects. It's called the code contracts pane. And in the properties window on the code contracts pane, you can check the box which says perform runtime contract checking.
And there are other boxes?
Other boxes, we'll get to those in a few minutes, but let's start with the simplest one. So this just says that I would like my contracts enforced at runtime. You'll see that there's another checkbox which says perform static checking. And I'll show you that in a minute. But first, let's just think about the simplest scenario, which is making sure these contracts are enforced at runtime. What does it mean to enforce them at runtime? Now, if I run the program, I get a different failure. You don't see the exception, which says divide by zero, because I never even got to that place. Instead, I get a message that says the precondition failed. And if I push the retry button...
So the precondition ends up being a debug assert call at some point.
Yes, right? The simplest form is that the precondition becomes a call to debug assert, forcing that condition to be true at runtime. And as you can see in the call stack here, I never even got as far down in the main program. I never even got to that, you know, much, much later call to the toInt method. Instead, the error is surfaced right here at the beginning when I construct the rational because I violated that precondition. So this is one way to let clients know that they should not, about the contracts on the types that they use.
So I could already do that in the past just by writing a little static method. So what's
That's right. So the difference, so why is it so much better? Well, let's go back to the properties pane, and this time let's turn on static checking. So I check the box for static checking. Let's go back to the program, and now I'm going to build again. Let's stop the debugger.
So why do I need a static checker? I already have the compiler.
That's right. But the compiler was already happy with this code to begin with. So the compiler didn't complain at all about you calling a method with zero as the denominator. But it's Right. The compiler doesn't have enough smarts to know that it's wrong. It doesn't know anything about the contracts. It's legal to call, in terms of what the semantics of the programming language are, it's legal to call that method with a zero. If a runtime exception happens, it's not the compiler's business.
So you've built a tool that now understands the contract and understands the code.
So the static checker is like a compiler. It runs at build time. It doesn't run. You don't need to execute your program. It runs at build time, and what it's looking for is any violations of contracts. So notice that it found immediately the fact that that call to the rational constructor was violating the precondition. And in fact, it has an associated warning that even highlights the line where the precondition is.
So if I click on the associated warning, I get to the line that...
You get to the precondition, and the first and the main error gets you to the line that violated the precondition. In this case, it's the call to the constructor with the zero as the second argument. So this is even better than the runtime checking in the sense that I'm getting even further upstream. And it tells me for all program executions whether there's a problem, not just for the one particular scenario that I happen to be executing. The reason we still need the runtime checking is that it's not possible for the static checker to always be smart enough to always find every possible problem. And so you often want the runtime checking enabled as well. All right, so, okay, so clearly the thing wrong here was to pass in a zero as that argument. Let's put in a...
So you mentioned runtime checking. It's important to say that the contracts can go away entirely.
Contracts could go away entirely. If we were able to verify every client of this rational class and know that they would never violate that precondition, if we validated all of the clients that ever could exist, then we could actually remove that precondition. So for public APIs, that's not very likely. I mean, the whole point of a public API is you're probably going to want preconditions on there because you want this parameter validation. But certainly on your internal methods, you could have a precondition and then verify your code with the static checker and then realize that you don't need those contracts any longer. And we have ways to turn those contracts on and off during runtime. Right, so I might as well show you that now. When I turned on the runtime checking before, there's a pull down here that says I either want full runtime checking, only preconditions is the middle option, and the bottom option is requires always. So let me talk about what those three different things are. So the only thing I've shown so far is a precondition.
So that's requires.
That's requires. So full and preconditions looks the same currently, because I haven't shown you anything more than a precondition. The requires always allows you to have checking for a particular method that whose name is requires always, that you can put in that's always going to be in your retail bills. Because what's going on under the covers to do this runtime checking is we're going to be doing a binary manipulation of your compiled assemblies. And if you don't want that, but you still want some preconditions checked, you can use a special method that will be there even in the runtime bits. Okay, so let me, at this point, let's fix that call to the constructor and now call it with a valid argument. And let's see what the static checker thinks of the code now. So it runs in the background. It takes a little bit longer than the compiler because it's a little smarter than the compiler, so it has to spend a little more time thinking. And it's warning me now that there's actually a possible division by zero. And that division by zero can still occur in the toInt method, even though I thought I was making it impossible by never allowing a rational to be constructed with a zero denominator. But the static checker is thinking about all possible scenarios. And all possible scenarios include the fact that I might include other methods on this class. I might have subtypes of this class. And there's nothing to prevent a rational number from getting a zero denominator, even though it never was created with a zero denominator in the first place. So I have to protect against that somehow. So we're not talking about an entry to a particular method like the constructor. We're talking about in any state, whenever I have a rational number, I should never have a zero denominator. That idea is called an object invariant, and that's where we get into something more than just preconditions. So let me add a object invariant, and we do that in a separate method inside the same class. And now I'm going to show you something nice we've added to the Visual Studio integration. Until now, I've had to type out every contract explicitly, but we have a bunch of what are called snippets. So if I type CIM for contract invariant method, and then hit tab, it generates the boilerplate for me.
Sweet.
Which makes it so easy to write contracts. And it even populates the object invariant method with the first invariant. And that method, that
so
invariant.
You shouldn't use requires in that method. You have a special
this method.
No,
the only methods that can be used in the object invariant method is the method itself whose name is contract.invariant. And I know that seems a little bit convoluted, but we're trying to make sure that you only write code in these methods that is the right kind of code, and that's expressions. An invariant is an expression that is evaluated on the object to determine if it's invariant holds or not. And so we're trying to prevent you from writing arbitrary code in there. So let me write the invariant, and in this case it's that the denominator should be greater than zero. And let's build again. And this time, the static checker realizes that there's no way for the rational number to be in a state where its denominator is zero. And so the tuit method will never have to do a runtime check, and it can never generate a divide by zero exception. So we've now made our code more robust, safer, and clearer to clients. So even though the object invariant is internal to the class itself, the precondition is a communication between this class and any client, telling it what's expected of the clients. And clients need to know what they can expect, what is expected of them, and a client wants to know what can they get back, what guarantees are they made by the code that they're calling. And those are called postconditions, so a method can give back a guarantee. So let's make some more changes to this class. Let's say that...
let's say the rational should be always positive.
For instance, let's make sure the rational is always positive. So I'm going to add another invariant that the numerator is also positive. I guess we could make that a little bit weaker and say that it's at least zero. It doesn't have to be positive. It could be zero itself, because we could have a zero, a rational representing the number zero. And now let's build again and see what the static checker thinks. And the static checker says, well, there's a problem in the constructor. You added invariant saying that no rational should ever exist with a numerator which is negative, and yet the constructor does nothing about guaranteeing that. So an invariant is checked at the end of each constructor to make sure that the newly created instance meets its invariant, and it's checked at the end of every public method, making sure that every time you call a public method on this instance, it maintains its invariant before it returns. Okay, so clearly we need to have another precondition saying that the numerator, so I'll type CR tab tab for the code snippet
for the contract requires.
Contract.requires, and we'll say that the numerator must be at least zero. And we'll build again. And we'll see that this time it says that it checked all seven assertions that are in the program, and they're all correct. So
now that we know that it's a positive rational, we could actually add something to tuint. So we could now give some guarantees that the result
yes.
of tuint is positive.
That's right. So, right, then that's right. Thank you. So that's where you're going with that. So I got side
well, you're doing the typing, I'm doing the thinking.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody's doing the thinking. Right. So the point was, we want to be able to tell clients what to expect when tuint returns. And that's called contract.insures. And there's a snippet CE, tab, tab. And I can say that the result of the method, well, how do I talk about the result? I talk about the result by, again, another method. And a CRR, tab, tab puts in a snippet for that. So I can talk about the result coming back from the method, and I'm going to let the client know that they're always going to get a non-negative number, a non-negative integer back from this.
So I'm going to stop you right there. So you've written the post condition before the return value. So
right.
At runtime, this is not going to work.
So clearly, this is why I mentioned before that we actually, what our tools do is have to step in and do a rewriting of the assembly after the compiler's done with it, because we have to take calls like contract.insures and move them to the end of the method. And we have to replace that call to contract.result with whatever value really is being returned from the method at that invocation. And I'll show that to you. Why don't we look at that? So let me. So the static checker's happy with everything. Let's go into the runtime checking. And now I'm going to press F10 to start the debugger. Ready? All right. So let's see how the runtime checking works. I want to show you how our rewriting of the binary actually does move the postcondition, the contract.insures call, after the return statement. So I'll go into the debug menu and click on, there, right, so I'm in the debugger. So now we need to step over. And, right, let's step over again. And now let's step into the tuint method. You see that we begin the tuint method, And notice that the first thing that's executed is the return statement. It looks in the debuggers if we just jump right over the post condition, because the post condition has been moved afterwards. So if we go again to step over, now you see that the post condition is being evaluated, and if we look at the locals window, you see that there's even a local whose name is contract.result that shows us the value that is being used
Sweet.
In place of contract.result. And we see that it's testing whether 0 is greater than or equal to 0. And so if we step over that, we get back to the call and name.
So whatever expression you write in the insurers ends up in a string somewhere.
For any of these contracts, the expressions end up in a string. Because, okay, let's stop this debug session. And let's do something. Let's just break the post condition by returning a negative 3. Okay? I mean, silly thing. I just want to show you what happens. And now if I press F5 to run, I'm going to get that post condition violation. And notice that it shows me the string of the condition that was in the call. It says contract.result of int. It's a generic method, so depending on what the return type is, you have to instantiate it. So the result of this method should be greater than or equal to 0, and it's saying that that failed. So when
Very
we
nice.
Rewrite the assembly, we not only move the post conditions to the end and trap the return value, we actually grab the source text for the contract and we put that in the message so that you really get a really good runtime experience.
Very nice.
Okay, and as we saw, notice that when I went to run the debugger again, it built again, and of course the static checker noticed that the post condition failed because negative 3 is not greater than or equal to 0. So let me retrieve the correct code and once again build, and we'll see that the static checker once more time is happening.
Very cool. So people can, we already talked about it, you can download it from DevLabs.
Go get it right now from DevLabs, start playing with it, let us know if you run into any problems, and more importantly, if how much you love it. We think that this could really change the way people program. It will mean that now, when you use an API, you get more than just the signatures of the methods you're calling. You'll understand what the conditions are that you need to fulfill to call those methods, and you'll also get information about what you can expect in return from having called those methods.
So we could expect, for example, in the future that it integrates into documentation. And
we're currently working on that. That's not in the today's release, but we're working on it to be able to surface this in the documentation.
So that's great. Mike, thanks a lot. We're going to shoot a video on how this integrates with unit testing in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great, because I think we have a great story about how contracts and unit testing just work so well together. And we'll do a separate video of that and really go into depth on that.
So and then Mike and I have to go back to Seattle by bike, so it's going to be a big race.
And we know who's going to win.
Well, thanks a lot, and see you on Channel 9.
See you.